talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Good morning and welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. Today is April the 3rd, and we haven't been here in a couple of weeks. My name's Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Kate Marquis.
Kate Marquis is here. Yay. We missed last week. 2 weeks ago, I announced that our guest in the studio this week was going to be Renee Hirschfield. The very next day, poor Renee passed away and couldn't make it, obviously. Renee was a good friend of mine and had an encyclopedic knowledge of film. I met Renee about 5 years ago when we became very fast friends. But I was aware of Renee because for the past 10 years I have assembled the winning team for the Cinema St. Louis movie trivia. And before I met Renee, there was always this one team that was always right on our tails. There was always two or three points behind us, and I figured there was some ace on that team. And when I got to know Renee, I realized that she was indeed the movie trivia ace that was on this team. I tried to steal her away from that team and get her to join our team the past couple of years, but she wouldn't do it. She was devoted to her friends on her trivia team. Renee was going to come on, and she was supposed to have attended the Turner Classic Movies Film Festival in Los Angeles this past weekend. She had her plane tickets and her movie tickets, and she was going to talk to us about that. And she also was excited about the upcoming Crime and Noir Classics on the Loop film series. We were going to talk about that with Renee, but unfortunately, Renee passed away actually teaching a film class. She collapsed while delivering a lecture on film. So RIP and God bless Renee Hirschfield, but we're glad that Kate is here. And speaking of trivia, Kate and Jim and I played trivia the other night in Roxana, Illinois.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No one was, three or four points behind us this time.
No, I think 11 or 12. It was a movie trivia bloodbath.
That was always a fun night there in Roxana. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Not the hardest movie questions. Nowhere nearly as challenging or as difficult as what they come up with for the Cinema St. Louis movie trivia.
Hopefully they can iron out the tech problems by next year.
Oh, yeah.
They had a few gaffes there. But it was a nice evening there.
It was fun.
As long as you're not having to spend half your time arguing with the judges, it's a nice trivia.
Yeah, that's always
good. You
don't
have to do that at all. And then I saw Kate again yesterday. We went out to New Haven, Missouri, and we watched some Buster Keaton shorts with live music by the Rats and People Motion Picture Orchestra. What did you think of that, Kate?
Oh, that was wonderful. That was delightful. The theater was a cute little theater I'd never visited before. It's always a treat to see Buster Keaton on a big screen.
No doubt.
And the music just was terrific.
It was. All right, well, let's talk about the top 12 at the box office over the weekend. Number 12 was Hidden Figures with 0.4. Number 11 was The Shack, 2.2. Number 10 was The Zookeeper's Wife with $3.3 million. I reviewed that at We Are Movie Geeks the other night, and I gave it 2.5 out of 5 stars. I wasn't particularly impressed with The Zookeeper's Knife. Not a terrible movie, but not a very good one.
It did crack the top 10, so that's a triumph.
And it is a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, it's manipulative, that's for sure. And some people like it.
That's one way.
Kathy at Matinee Chat said it's the best film of the year so far.
Oh, my.
I'm sure it's a lot better than the number 9 film, which was Chips. $4.1 million. We would review Chips, but not. None of us saw it. They didn't show it to us.
I had a screening Saturday morning and almost went over there to see it, but I was like, I thought the better of it.
Well, so Jim almost saw it, but he's not going to almost review it. Number 8 was Life in its second week, made 5.6.
That's a big drop.
Yeah, that's a big drop. I kind of liked Life. We're going to review that here in a minute. Number 7 was Get Out. Still, I saw that again. Part of that $5.8 million it made last weekend was mine. I saw it a second time with my 17-year-old. Number 6 was Logan, made 6.2. Mm-hmm. Kong Skull Island, still in the top 5. It has made 8.8. Number 4 is Power Rangers. Anyone in this room see Power Rangers?
No.
Okay, we won't have to review that.
Michael reviewed that for us.
Oh, okay.
He took the bullet for us.
Was that his second? Was this his second weekend?
Yeah, this is his second weekend.
So it made $14.5 million in its second weekend. I guess that's pretty good. Ooh. It has its fan base.
Yeah. Considering the big fan base, it's a pretty good big slide. Yeah.
Ghost in the Shell made $19.0 million. You guys both saw that. And,
yes.
Kate, you reviewed that?
Yes, I did.
All right, we're going to review that here on the podcast here in a second. That made 19, I said. 2, Beauty and the Beast made $47.5 million in its third weekend, but it was knocked off its top perch by Boss Baby. That's a bit of a shocker. $49 million for Boss Baby. That must have overperformed a little.
Yeah, that's what all the headlines were saying. I think it was Fox released that they were very surprised, but delightfully surprised by the overperformance.
It's not getting great reviews. I think it's at about 48% or something at the tomato meter.
Yeah. Maybe it's Alec Baldwin.
But Jim saw it. How many stars did you give it?
I think I gave it 3.5. Yeah. I think I enjoyed it more than most.
All right, well, we can go in a little more detail here in a minute. All right, we got a lot of movies to review, like 10.
Oh, my.
All right, so let's get started. Jim, why don't you go ahead and talk about Boss Baby?
Have you learned anything?
A, B, C, D.
No, what have you learned about puppies?
Hey, puppy!
No, Jimbo, puppies are evil. Stacy, read back the notes.
I can't read. What's it say?
Okay. This is the newest from DreamWorks Animation. I think you pretty much know the plot from the commercials. But needless to say that where babies come from is a heavenly-like place. And some babies go back down to Earth, the ones that are tickled. And others become executives, part of Baby Corps. And that's what Alec Baldwin's character, and he's just called Boss Baby. And he's the little brother to Tim. And he's actually on a mission to stop a plot from Puppy Corps. And I thought it was good and peppy. It didn't rely as much on the bodily function jokes as I fear. There are, of course, plenty of diaper jokes. I think DreamWorks still relies a bit too much on pop culture and pop tunes in their humor. But overall, I like the pace. I thought that it's kind of switches in its last act to pull at the heartstrings, and it kind of worked. I know we're talking about manipulative. I know I was being manipulated, but I enjoyed that. I think Baldwin really sells it. He even makes some fun of his previous.
He seems perfectly cast.
He is pretty terrific. He's the reason to see it there. Also, Steve Buscemi, who you don't really see much in the commercials, he's very entertaining as the villain of the piece. And I like the look of the animation. It has sort of a nice 50s, early 60s retro suburban look until it gets to Vegas and it's all neon glitter. I like the character design. The babies, of course, look great with the large craniums and big eyes. I think I singled out the henchman of the Boss Baby Jimbo, this little diaper-clad baby behemoth, I called him. He's very entertaining. Mm-hmm. And, I think there's enough jokes in there for the adults that I think it's, you'll be fairly entertained by it. So I think it's pretty decent. It's it's certainly a lot better than, say, Angry Birds last year, or certainly better than the one I endured Saturday morning, which we'll talk about later.
Okay.
It's not Pixar, it's not Moana or Frozen, but it's pretty entertaining.
All right, well, good. So Jim kind of recommends Boss Baby. Fine, let's move on. Personal Shopper. Do we all see Personal Shopper?
No.
Oh, Jim did not see it. Kate and I saw Personal Shopper. Did you review it for Weird Movie Geek?
Yes, I did.
How many stars did you give it?
I think I gave it 4.5 because I really liked it. I was very much surprised by it, despite the title. The title sounds like you're going to be following around somebody as she shops for her wealthy boss.
That's part of it, actually.
And yes, that is her job, but that's not the main theme of the film. It's really kind of more of a ghost story, and it has a lot of twists and surprises, and you're not always sure what's going on, but it's very well done. It's very atmospheric, and it raised enough questions that it's just different than other ghost stories. It's scary without being gory, and just philosophically interesting, too. You do have to read some French subtitles because it's in French and English.
It's a good film.
Very beautifully made.
Yeah, too. I was enjoying it while I was watching it. Although I will confess that it hasn't really stayed with me that much. It's not a movie I've spent much time thinking about. You got to really credit Kristen Stewart, who stars in this film. She started her career off giving these sort of vapid performances in these Twilight movies, and I think a lot of people may have written her off. But she was in this director's movie, The Clouds of Silas Marna.
This is the same director, and he gets a wonderful performance out of her again.
Yeah, and she was wonderful as the Object of Desire in Woody Allen's movie last year. So you got to credit Miss Stewart for making smart choices and choosing roles. She's not showing up in these lame, comedies about women on road trips and things like that.
And she didn't return to Snow White, thank heaven.
Yeah.
And actually, I think this director gets the best work out of her. He seems to know
But she doesn't really emote a lot. There's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of scenes her just taking her clothes off and putting clothes on, trying clothes on, shopping, and walking around, not doing a whole lot. But, you know, in some ways, that's just as tricky as emoting in a lot of scenes. And she does emote. And I think you're right. I think it works best as a ghost story. It's kind of an old-fashioned ghost story.
Yeah, kind of like The Haunting or The Uninvited or something
kind
like that.
Of.
Well, sort of, with a kind of European twist to it, because there's a lot of philosophy about, you know, do ghosts exist? Do we live on? That sort of exploration. And they don't make a big commitment to either particular view.
Kate really liked it. Kate gave it 4.5 stars.
I thought it was very interesting.
Hey, I thought it was very interesting, too.
Yeah, hey, if you had how many stars would you have given Boss Baby, Kate?
Oh, you saw that?
I don't know. I think maybe 3.5. I mean, I was entertained, but I'm not sure it was as entertaining for little kids as it was maybe for some of the adults, because, you know, and Alec Baldwin, he's the whole show in it, I thought, for the most part.
I would have given Personal Shopper 3.5 or maybe 4. 3.75 if I could. But but we don't
so we're
do
not
that
far off.
We're moviegeeks.com.
3.83.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
All right. We still got 8 more movies to review.
All right.
Kate, what the heck is this? In Search of Israel Cuisine. Is that a documentary?
Yeah, it is a documentary, and it's a lot more interesting than you think, because it's not just about food, although food's a major theme. The host on this journey is a chef from Philadelphia. He has an Israeli restaurant called Zahav, and his name is Michael Solomonov. And he was actually born in Israel, grew up in the U.S., went back to Israel, so he's kind of got a foot in both worlds. And he goes back there, and he talks about how Israeli cuisine has become on the cutting edge of new cuisine, and why should that happen? And he comes to the conclusion that part of it is the mix of cultures. Just of the Jewish themes in there, there are people from Morocco, people from Israel, from Iraq, from Iran, from Egypt, from Turkey. It takes place in Israel. So he travels around Israel instead of just staying in Jerusalem or Tel Aviv. He goes all over the country. He talks to different chefs. He talks to home cooks. He talks to farmers. He talks to cheesemakers. And there's a kind of travelogue aspect to it, because you get to see a lot of beautiful scenery. You meet a lot of people, see some colorful restaurants. And he goes through a kind of short history of Israel as well, how that relates to food and how elements of other cultures in their food are affected by politics and things like that. It's really very interesting film. Very entertaining.
All right.
And pretty to look at as well.
I just splashed the life of Brian. Blessed are the cheesemakers.
Well, they are in this film.
Or in a European vacation where they were stuck in the room with the 3 BBC channels and they were all running documentaries on making cheese.
No, it's much more entertaining than that. Yeah.
All right. So Kate recommends Search for Israel Cuisine. Look for a review Thursday night at WeWareMovieGeeks.com. Although we're not quite sure.
No, she's not reviewing.
No, I'm reviewing this.
Well, look for a review. We're not quite sure.
I'm reviewing this. I reviewed this one for the Jewish Light. That's where my review.
Do you do Star System at the Jewish Light?
No, we don't.
Do you do A, B, C at the Jewish Light?
No, actually,
we should.
We don't do a rating.
I want you to start doing a rating at the Jewish
Light. Well, that's up to the editor.
All right. Well, somebody else will be reviewing this at WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Let's move on. Wilson stars Woody Harrelson, and I haven't seen it. Did you guys both see that?
Yes, we did.
Good?
If you're a Woody Harrelson fan, it's a must, because he's having a dandy time in it. He's kind of being he's calling him like a curmudgeon. Yeah. He kind of a Luddite. He's not fond of people screaming into their devices around. I think the poster shows him getting way too close to somebody in a public restroom, which is right. He'll get right up in your face. And he's an interesting character. I think you wouldn't want to be hanging around with him too much. He'd just drive you kind of crazy.
And part of the sly humor of it is he continually calls himself a people person, when in fact he's socially awkward and he makes people uncomfortable all the time. So kind of a dark and edgy sort of fish out of water.
Yeah, this is from the graphic novel by Daniel Clowes. Mm-hmm. And he made a film I think you probably enjoyed it too, maybe not as much as I did, a great movie from 1999 called Ghost World that was based on his graphic novel, which is coming out on Criterion very soon. And he also provided the inspiration and the screenplay for Art School Confidential, not as strong as Ghost World. I think that...
Same director, wasn't it?
As
Terry Zweigel?
I don't think... I think so.
Is this
think it's Tori Zagoff directed both those films.
Oh, both those early films. Yes, yeah. I was going to say this one is by Craig Johnson, the fellow that did Skeleton Twins a few years ago.
Yeah, I didn't care about
and this is not quite as good as that film. I think there's a little twist to Wilson in that he finds out that his best friend is moving, and there's a very funny riff on the place he's moving to. I won't give that away, but he decides he needs to make new friends. He's going to get into the dating scene, and then he just offhandedly asks this potential date, I wonder whatever happened to my ex-wife, and she pulls out her device, her iPad, and said, let's find out. So he tracks her down, played by a very funny performance by Laura Dern, played Pippi, that's her name in it, and he believes that she took off from him, and she aborted their child, but she reveals, no, I didn't. I gave up the child for adoption. Mm-hmm. So then they decide to go track the child down. And that's a character called Claire, played by Isabel Amara. Very good performance. Mm-hmm. Seemed like a real teenager. So it's about them trying to connect and him discovering, that he actually has a family. And I think it's a good film. It does get in sort of a lull in the middle of it. It kind of loses its pacing and its footing when it's trying to become a little too sentimental at times. But for Woody Harrelson fans and for fans of Daniel Clowes, I think it's a film to see.
I think I liked it more than you. I liked it better than The Skeleton Twins. I felt like that one kind of sagged in the middle. Yeah, this one I felt held together better. I mean, the character himself gets lost. He gets turned around. He thinks how he imagines things are going to turn out, and they continually don't work out to his plans. But, things kind of work for him in the end, not how he expects them to. Mm-hmm. And I just was intrigued and amused the whole time.
Yeah. Woody Harrelson works a lot.
Although, yeah.
He does. But he does some junk.
He does some junk, but he's not like Nicholas Cage, John Cusack level of junk. He's picking smart scripts for the most part.
Well, he's done with those Hunger Games movies.
Yeah. And he's starring in the new Planet of the Apes movie.
Yeah, he is. He's the human villain in there. Yeah. So I think I gave it 3.5 in my review. So I think it's definitely an indie film. It practically screams that small budget film, but it's got some great supporting performances. Cheryl Hines is very funny as the villain in it, and it's got enough laughs in it, I think, to recommend.
All right, so Jim and Kate both recommend Wilson. Kate, what's this, France? How about a quick review of France?
Well,
but it's F-R-A-N-T-Z.
Right.
It's not the country France.
This is actually a film that by a French director, François Ozon, and it's partially in France, partially in French, and partially in German. It takes place in 1919, right after the war. And the woman who's at the center of this, her fiancé was killed in the war, and this fellow shows up. She's a German, and she's living with the parents of her dead fiancé. It was their only child, and they've kind of adopted her in a way. She has no parents of her own. And this man shows up from France who says that he knew her dead fiancé. And you think that this story is going to work out in a particular way. It looks like a period romance or something like that. And then it goes in a completely different direction and explores issues of loss, about war, about World War I in particular, about patriotism, about, suspicion of the other. It's just really an interesting film, and every time you think you have it figured out, it takes another turn.
Anybody in it?
It explores this. Well, no names that you're going to
recognize. Woody Harrelson's not in it?
No Woody Harrelson. Let's see. The woman who plays the lead is the character's name, Anna, is a 21-year-old actress called Paula Beer, and she's excellent in this. And it just explores issues of the lost generation of World War I, issues of suspicion between the countries, about trench warfare. It's just wonderful film. And it's done partially in black and white and partially in color, and it slips back and forth between the two of them depending on emotional tone. And the transition from color to black and white is done very cleverly. Sometimes it's, you go from this time period to a flashback, but sometimes it's you walk through a tunnel and now we're in color. Sometimes the color just fades in as the scene unfolds. That's and it has to do with art and philosophy as well. So really interesting film.
So you're reviewing that for We Are Movie Geeks?
Yes.
And how many stars are you going to give France?
Oh, 4.5, maybe 5.
4.5. Kate really likes France. So look for a review later this week at wearemoviegeeks.com. Yeah.
And I like something that has some intellectual heft.
Saturday morning, Jim saw Smurfs Lost in the Lost Village and loved it.
Rainy, hefty, clumsy. Oh, that's not even convincing.
I don't do well in the darkness. I have enough trouble in the daylight.
I didn't think Lost Village was going to be this hard to find.
Whatever you do, don't eat all your rations.
I just ate
I wouldn't say that.
I reviewed the first two Smurfs movies.
Yes.
And I didn't really like either of them. Is this one better?
Well, it's maybe a little better since it's not mixing live action and animation. This is pretty much all set in the Smurfs universe.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
a fully animated
CGI. So
it's
set in Smurfland.
Yes.
In those movies, the Smurfs came from Smurfland and then they entered New York City.
We're running around with Neil Patrick
Harris
and them, I suppose. But no, this one, they're all by themselves. And Smurfette is having an identity crisis. She's voiced by Demi Lovato in this one. And everyone seems to have a purpose. There's Baker Smurf and, you know, Brainy Smurf. They all have their little jobs. Smurf is just the girl Smurf. Mm. And she decides, you know, wants to know, you know, about herself. And she goes exploring and discovers that there's a village hidden away in a different part of their area. And she wants to go explore that. But she's also concerned because Gargamel is on the hunt. And he wants to get these new Smurfs.
Who voices Gargamel?
Rainn Wilson. And I tell you. Yeah, stick around if you can. You're going to want to leave as soon as the credits roll, I know.
Or before the credits roll.
Yeah, but if you stick around, Rain does a little riff on during the credits. It's very funny. Mm-hmm. That almost makes up for the dreadful pace of the rest of the film because it just kind of drags along. Luckily, it just concentrates on Smurfette and three Smurfs that go on the journey with her.
How's the quality of the animation?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I saw it in 2D. There's lots of segments in there where you know that they were aiming for the 3D effect for them. A lot of people, you know, a lot of stuff jumping all around. And some of the kids, you know, will enjoy some of the magical things in it. There's fluorescent bunny rabbits, and there's these dragonflies that they ride that actually shoot fire out of their mouths like real dragons. And this is a movie, you know, we saw it, Boss Baby is good for, you know, maybe up to preteens. This is for the pre-K set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is like a good first film to take your kids to because it's, you know, nothing too scary in it and nothing too complex in the plot that's going to throw them for a loop. They do find the Lost Village and there are lady Smurfs there. It's all populated by, you know, Amazons, I guess. Amazon Smurfs in there. They're led by Julia Roberts as Smurf Willow. And it relies a little too much on the celebrity voices, which is a trend that is a shame that they're going back to. But yeah, like I say, it's for the little kids. So if I were to give it a star, I would probably give it 2, you know, maybe 2.5. You know.
So Jim thinks Smurf Village is for toddlers. A great movie to take your child to for their first movie. A movie that's not so good to take your child to for their very first movie is Raw.
Oh, my.
Raw is a French movie about cannibalism and vegetarianism and veterinarianism. And Kate reviewed it for We Are Movie Geeks, and you gave it a whopping 4.5, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. It's a really interesting take on the horror movie genre, which I think it's hard to find something new in that. And it's this very innocent young girl goes away to school. She's going to become a veterinarian. Mm-hmm. Both her parents are veterinarians. Her older sister is already there. Her parents drop her off. The school's in the middle of nowhere. And her older sister's kind of in different, and it goes through the time period at the beginning of the term when all the new students are hazed. Mm-hmm. Something you wouldn't see in this country because this hazing involves drenching them in blood and having them eat raw animal parts, and brings out an unexpected reaction in this girl. So explores issues about, you know, the experience of going away to college and how that can bring out surprising things in yourself. But then there's the thing about the cannibalism, and there's a kind of vampirism theme too, and it's very, very gory, but it's also very scary and very well done. So, you know, in the horror film genre, You know, I thought it was surprisingly good.
I love this movie. I think this is the best horror film I've seen since The Witch last year. And I was thinking about it over the weekend. I think this is the best horror film ever made directed by a woman.
Yeah, it's a lot of women involved.
Women
in
have tried making horror films. The Babadook was pretty good. Catherine Bigelow's Near Dark is a pretty good one, but I think this is better than either of those films.
The Invitation was very good, too.
Invitation was pretty good. Pet Cemetery, American Psycho, all directed by women, but none of them, nothing prepared me for this movie raw. There's so much going on in this movie. There's just stuff about, you know, the sisterhood and family and of course, the cannibalism. And there's she has a gay roommate, but is he really gay? I don't know. There's so many great scenes. There's a scene where
they get
hazed by she gets blue paint dumped on her. And then this other guy gets yellow paint dumped on her. And they're said to go into a room and say, don't come out till you're both green. Well, you just know they're going to come out green and red. That scene is really good. It is kind of gory, and it's gotten a lot of the publicity. People are puking and they're handing out barf bags, but it's
very gory.
It is gory, but it's not exploitative. It's sort of integral to the story. I mean, and some of the gore is more like they're performing autopsies on dead dogs and cutting open dogs and pulling their guts out. There's even a shot where the sister's got her arm up a cow's rectum and is pulling out cow poop. And that's kind of gross. I didn't think, you know, the gore was over the top at all. But maybe I'm a little jaded. I like this kind of stuff. I love this movie, Raw, and it's only showing over at the Chase Park Plaza, and I have a feeling it's only going to be showing a couple more days. So if you're listening to this podcast and get over the Chase, do not miss Raw. I would give it 5 stars. Kate gave it 4.5. It's just a fascinating, terrific, and terrifying horror film.
Now, if you love horror films, this is one you shouldn't miss.
No doubt. Hmm. So Kate and I recommend Raw. When Raw was over, I snuck in and saw I almost said Transporter.
Oh, they're actually Terminator 2.
Train Spotting 2, which is directed by Danny Boyle. And
choose your future.
Call the police.
What shall I say?
Just tell them we're dead.
Choose reality TV, slut shaming, revenge porn. Yeah. Choose a zero-hour contract, a two-hour journey to work, and choose the same for your kids, only worse. And smother the pain with an unknown dose of an unknown drug made in somebody's kitchen. And then, take a deep breath.
Trainspotting 1 21 years ago, and this is his belated sequel. I was a little surprised when I heard that he'd made a sequel. I thought it was kind of an odd movie to make a sequel to.
Mm-hmm.
But these actors, I guess, like Danny Boyle and wanted to be in this sequel. It doesn't have a whole lot of story to it. It just sort of revisits these characters. And if you remember at the end of the original Trainspotting, Mark, played by Ewan McGregor, had stolen all the money from his three friends. They had done this big drug deal, and there were £60,000, and Mark took off with the money, which made Bigby, who was played by Robert Carlyle, absolutely furious. These guys were all heroin addicts, except Bigby. Bigby would make fun of him for being a heroin addict.
Well, he was furious most of the time.
Yeah, he was just the biggest hothead and in a drinker, I guess. But in this movie, Bigby is introduced as being in prison, where he has already he's served the past 21 years in prison. And it's kind of funny because you find out that he's in prison for murdering somebody that reminded him of Mark. How much he hates Mark. And he actually escapes from prison at about the 10-minute mark and goes after poor Mark. So Mark's kind of on edge throughout the film. You also visit with Spud. Spud is played by Ewan Bremner, and he's kind of the most sympathetic of these characters. And he's the only one of the four who's still addicted to heroin in this new movie. And his character is really sad. His character is kind of sad in the first one. It's even more sad in this one. He's got a young son that he's forbidden to see and things like that. And then the fourth guy is a Sick Boy, is what he was known as in the first movie. He was played by Johnny Lee Miller, but he's not referred to as Sick Boy anymore. He's referred to as Simon, and he has switched from heroin to cocaine, and he's pulling these scams where he has this girlfriend, and her name is Veronica, and she's played by Angela Nedyalakova, who was really terrific. She's sort of the new character. She's sort of the fifth character because she has a really big part, but the scam involves her being a prostitute, and he's filming her with these customers, and then he goes out and tries to blackmail these guys, and they're trying to raise enough money to open a bordello where she can be the madam. That's their goal. Mark has actually been living in the Netherlands, But he comes back to Scotland, and because he's sick and he wants to visit with his friends. Like I said, there's not a whole lot to the plot. It's really important that you remember that the $60,000 was stolen, because that's what sort of kicks all the story into action here. It's really good, though. Danny Boyle has always been sort of a dynamic filmmaker. And he made the movie 21 years ago. He did a lot of fancy camera tricks and freeze frames and stuff. And now he's matured and he's won an Oscar, et cetera. But he's still doing that. He still has a lot of loud rock and roll music and interesting camera angles and things like that. So he didn't try to make it a different film. It really plays like a direct sequel to Trainspotting, which is exactly what it is. This new actress, Angela Nedjakalova, is really good. She looks distractingly like Felicity Jones, though. She has those same two big front teeth that Felicity Jones has, which is really cute. But besides that, she's really good. She's a young actress to look for. Everybody's really good in this film. It's funny. The fecal-covered toilet that's played such a major part in the first one makes a cameo. So look for that. I really was surprised how much I enjoyed Trainspotting 2. I highly, highly recommend it.
And why wasn't it shown to us?
I don't know.
For goodness sakes.
Yeah, how many stars would you have given it?
I would give it 4.5, probably.
Wow.
Yeah. All right, what's left? What's left? What's left? Oh, Ghost in the Shell.
You were dying. We saved you. And now you save others.
Worlds turn violent.
Oh, you guys saw Ghost in the Shell, didn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, who reviewed that?
Oh, that was you, Kate.
It was
so,
me.
How many
I'll
stars
start.
Did you give it?
Both I think I gave it 2, and maybe that was generous.
That was pretty generous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this has been highly anticipated. A live action version of the classic Japanese anime film, Ghost in the Shell, based on a manga. And in fact, they recreate a lot of the scenes shot for shot, but they threw away the plot. So they come up with a completely different plot that's kind of more a standard action film thing. And although it looks really nice and Scarlett Johansson looks fabulous and all, you know, just recreating individual scenes with a completely different story. Plus there's the issue of that was a Japanese movie and the cast is predominantly not Japanese or Asian.
Yeah. I just thought I found the film just really cold, you
know?
Well,
and it's a very boring story. The one they threw out this very interesting, complex story, and they replaced it with this really conventional, dull, you've seen this a million times story.
Yeah, I actually caught myself nodding off 2 or 3 times. I hate to admit that, but I'd stop myself just in time. There's a couple of dialogue scenes that just go nowhere, and it's in sort of the same tone, and certainly the visuals are nice. The city owes a lot to Blade Runner.
It looks very expensive.
It's all shot in New Zealand, as I understand.
Right.
But I just could not get into it. I couldn't really care about what's going on. The original animated film is from 1989, so we've seen variations of the story taken by other producers.
And it's influenced a lot of filmmakers. I mean, the Wachowski brothers, or twins.
Yeah. Yes.
The sisters, you mean.
Sisters, I'm sorry,
I think
confused.
They're both women. Now.
They are both women, but they weren't when The Matrix was made.
I know. They should make a movie about those guys.
Yeah. But anyway. There are elements of RoboCop in it, a lot of, even some Soylent Green maybe in there.
Lots of visual references to other films, particularly ones that were influenced by the original one.
Yeah.
And, you know, I give Scarlett Johansson some credit for doing a good job in the role. And the effects, I thought, looked really good. It's just that why on earth would you replace the plot for such a famous film?
And it's got some controversy because the Japanese character at the center of the film is played by an American white gal.
They're all, except for I think one or two, all the other major characters are not.
Are not Asian. Well, they should have taped up the sides of her.
No. Getting into Cloud Atlas territory No. Their boss is this Takahashi Mike or something. What was his name? I can't
he's
recall
been
it. Yeah, but he speaks all of his dialogue in Japanese and it's subtitled.
Right.
But he's having conversations and his subordinates are conversing with him in their language too.
Right.
So it's very odd. But yeah, it just, like I say, it just didn't do a thing for me. And I guess you're talking about Boss Baby overperformed, this underperformed.
Oh,
at,
yeah.
At just 19, this is going to be quite a bath for Paramount.
It's going to sink as soon as people who love the original anime film go to see it and see that it's a completely different story.
It did $19 million, which is probably maybe right around what they expected, or do you think it underperformed?
I think they expected at least $30 million. I would bet. So
it didn't look like a movie that was going to make a lot of money.
Certainly didn't do as well as Lucy, which is kind of a similar situation with Scarlett Johansson. Yeah.
Well, that's
an action role.
Yeah, much more original.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. Anything else you guys want to say about this movie?
Kate gave
it 2. How many would you have given it, Jim?
I think 1.5, maybe.
All right. And I have no desire to see it. So
you can skip it.
Yeah, maybe the 3D would have helped. I don't know.
I don't think so. A new plot would have helped.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the old plot, actually.
Yeah.
All right. We're doing really well. We only have one more movie to review, and that is Light. Life is a science fiction movie. I saw it. You guys both see it?
We both saw it.
Get this original plot. This is crazy, man. I don't know. Who came up with this? There's a spaceship in space, and there's an alien on board, and it picks off the members of the crew one by one. Crazy. But I kind of like Life. How many stars did you give it, Kate?
I think I gave it 3.
3? Okay. I'd have given it 3.5, maybe even 4.
I thought it had good moments and bad moments.
Yeah, I'd give it a 2.
Really?
Yeah.
My biggest problem with it was the cast was so bland. I mean, it's obviously just the same plot as Alien, but look at Alien. You've got these great character actors like Harry Dean Stanton and Ian Holm and John Hurt. And here you've got blandly handsome Jake Gyllenhaal and blandly handsome Ryan Reynolds, who were just completely interchangeable. Pretty British Rebecca Ferguson, pretty Russian actress, I don't know her name. But they did stick a black guy and a Chinese guy in there for, I guess, ethnic diversity.
Yeah,
but all these characters are totally interchangeable.
It did take a couple of unexpected turns in that that setting up Jake Gyllenhaal's character start off to be unhinged because he wants to stay up there in space. He's been up there for like years.
Even though it's ruining his health, he doesn't want to go back to Earth.
And generally in these type of films, there's usually a scientist type that say, "Oh no, we can't kill the creature. We have to study it and all that." This time, when the creature goes on the warpath, they all go, "Let's kill this thing."
Yeah. Well, and in this case, the scientist, the exobiologist, is the one who kind of starts this, and that makes no sense at all to me. Mm-hmm. He's the one who gets overly enamored of the cute little life form and kind of starts to break protocol. That's what sets it in motion.
And I've heard this, they say, well, the creature's like us. It needs, oxygen and all that. And then there's a sequence where it's jumping around outside the ship for a long time. Yeah. I'm like, really? Come on, man.
I thought there was a couple things clever about this movie. I like that they stuck with this whole anti-gravity thing. So that was a little different than Alien. And so you had these characters constantly flying through space or sort of swimming through space and going up and down these corridors and getting to these hatches and closing them just in time for the little alien. That was kind of exciting. And I sort of appreciated the fact that the alien, they could have brought a big, predator or a big alien thing, but the alien was kind of the size of a cat, and it looked like a cross between a plant and an octopus. It was sort of small.
Starfish.
Well, that was sort of clever. And I also loved the sort of nihilistic twist ending. I was hoping that was coming, and it did. And it sort of set it up for a sequel. Of course, it'll have to have a different cast.
I have to say that I felt like the pacing was so slow at some points that you would start to figure out what was going to happen next, and that was unfortunate.
Hmm. But it did have one of the most gruesome space deaths I've seen
it
on
certainly
film.
Did.
Oh, yeah. I took my 13-year-old, and she had some nightmares about that.
That sequence about a malfunctioning spacesuit on an outer spacewalk. That's all I'll say about it. But yeah, very doubtful if there'll be a sequel there, I think.
It depends how well it does globally.
I think audiences are reacting that it's kind of an alien knockoff, and they'll just wait a few months for Alien Covenant.
But I didn't have super high expectations of this. It's just contained. I thought it was pretty exciting. I thought it was pretty well-paced. It's only about an hour and 40 minutes.
It didn't
wear out its welcome, in my opinion.
Me too, and when I started to figure out where the plot was going next,
All right. So I would have given it 3.5, and you gave it 3, and Jim would have given it 2. All right, so we're all over the map on Life. So let's move on. Although I don't think we have to move on. I think we have reviewed all of our movies. Woohoo!
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are we seeing tonight, Tom?
What are we seeing tonight? Going in Style. Yes. Stars Alan Arkin and Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman. The trailer, I have to admit, looks pretty darn funny.
Yeah.
We'll see. Maybe all the good stuff's in the trailer, or maybe it's a really good script. I think it'll do pretty well if it's a good film.
I have warm memories of the... actually, I looked it up. It's from 1979, the original Going in Style, with Art Carney, George Burns, and
Lee Strasberg. Yeah.
And George Burns. If you're a fan of Burns and you just know him from the Oh God movies and all that, see Going in Style. He's really great.
Art Carney's very funny in that, too. Sure, I like that original one. I'm not sure it needed to be remade.
We'll see. We'll be back next week, and we'll review Going in Style. Okay, enough movie reviewing. We got a lot of stuff going on locally. Tomorrow night is 16mm double feature night. This is my show over at the Way Out Club at the corner of Jefferson and Gravois. I'll be showing First Blood, starring Sylvester Stallone, followed by Smokey and the Bandit, starring Burt Reynolds. And that starts at 8 o'clock. It is free. I do set out a jar for the National Children's Cancer Society. Both of those prints are from the collection of Roger Burke. And this is where I get to announce next month's show. This is super exciting. This will be the first time anyone has heard what we are showing next month at 16mm Double Feature Night. It is May 2nd, 4 weeks from tomorrow. Two black and white films.
Oh, cool.
So we don't have to worry about the color fading. First off, from 1949, Oscar winner for Best Special Effects, it's Mighty Joe Young.
Great.
Yes, it's from Roger's collection. Mighty Joe Young, of course, stars Terry Moore and Ben Johnson. Terrific special effects, overseen by Willis O'Brien, although Ray Harryhausen did about 90% of the animation. And Willis O'Brien went home with the Oscar, but that's okay.
Yes.
That'll start at 8 o'clock, and then after that is a movie from my collection. If it's from my collection, there's a good chance it stars Charles Bronson, and this one does. From 1958, Charles Bronson's first starring role. It is Machine Gun Kelly, directed by Roger Corman. Now, this is a special film because you cannot get this movie on any home video format. It did come out on VHS in the mid-80s, but besides that, it's never been available on DVD or anything like that. So if you want to see Machine Gun Kelly, you'll have to go to the Way Out Club on May 2nd. This is a movie that really made film critics in Europe take notice of Roger Corman. There's a lot going on. It's not just a cheap gangster movie. This is a really, really well-made movie, and Bronson's terrific in it. He laughs and smiles and cackles. This isn't a Bronson that you saw later on in his career where he never changes his expression. And his co-star, Maury Amsterdam from the Dick Van Dyke Show, is in it.
Yeah.
And Susan Cabot is his mall in it. Susan Cabot was an interesting actress who starred in The Wasp Woman and a couple other films, and was murdered by her son, who was a dwarf. And they were going to make a movie about Susan Cabot's life a few years ago, but I guess it never got off the ground. So that is May 2nd at the Way Out Club, starting at 8 o'clock. This Saturday morning over at the High Point is What's Up, Doc? Peter Bogdanovich's 1972 or 73?
I'm thinking maybe it's 72.
I saw that at the Esquire, which is right around the corner from the High Point when it was new. I've always really liked this movie. And I think Barbara Streisand's really at her sexiest in this movie.
It's a nice little love letter to the Howard Hawks, Cary Grant, Kate Hepburn films of the 30s. But it was part of a scandal near my hometown. It played at the drive-in in my hometown, and it was a rarity because that What's Up, Doc was got a G rating when it came out. There was, we take our kids to it. I think it was on a double feature with the Skin Game, the James Garner comedy. But the previews in between them were for these X-rated movies. And so everyone was honking their horns and writing to the editor of their papers, and why did you do that? I brought the kids because it's a G-rated film. This is a very funny film. Funny performance by Madeline Kahn.
She was nominated for Golden Globe for her performance in What's Up, Doc.
But she's really funny in
this. She plays Ryan O'Neal's fiance. So I'm going to try to make that. And let's see what else we got going on locally. Drunken Master is Midnight's at the Tivoli Friday and Saturday night. I host the Midnight Show at the Tivoli. I didn't host this past weekend at a Rocky Horror Picture Show. They have their own crew to host that one, but I will be hosting Friday night. Drunken Masters from 1978. It's considered to be one of Jackie Chan's really very best, hardcore kung fu movies before he sort of became, a bigger star and was working with bigger budgets. This is pretty much...
It's still one of my favorites.
50% of it is just fighting. I mean, but if you like to see Jackie Chan and his amazing techniques and skills,
he's still very funny. He's still very, you know, charming.
It's very funny.
You know,
yeah.
It's like you're just starting to see that Jackie Chan persona emerge in this one.
He's kind of doing a riff to, or kind of a tribute to Keaton and
which he did more broadly in his later films.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's just starting to do that.
Yeah. And then after the success of like Rumble in the Bronx, they remade Drunken Master. They called it The Legend of Drunken Master with a huge budget, and there was a lot of stuff like on trains. That was a fascinating film as well. They showed that at Webster U. But they are showing the 1978 original Drunken Master this weekend. I checked with the Tivoli guys. So, go see that. Yes Songs at Schlafly. Anybody seen Yes Songs? It's a concert film. This is part of the Strange Brew film series.
Is that ELO or a
No, it's Yes.
It's Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they did a Roundabout.
Show by rock and roll.
You know,
knowledge.
Roundabout.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Roundabout was their big hit. Yes Songs was shot on videotape in 1973, so you can just imagine the quality. I did an article about it and tried to get some image, and they all look like they were shot through some dirty glass or something. But this is, I guess it's considered a good rock and roll film. John Scorfina, who programs the films for the Strange Brew film series, it seems like every third or fourth film he puts in a concert film. But he's a big music guy. In fact, his father was one of the founding members of REO Speedwagon,
really?
Steve Scorfina. So go see Yes Songs Wednesday night at 8 o'clock at Schlafly if you like to see these rock and roll concert films. They always do a good job. And let's see, The Outlaw with Jane Russell is Thursday night at Schlafly at 7 o'clock. That's part of the A-film series.
Jane Russell and her bosom.
That's right. Which
Who
did
doesn't
cause,
like?
Did cause a little controversy 75 years ago. I used to host this film series, but it's become the public domain film series. And I don't know if The Outlaw is considered a particularly good film. I think it's more known for its promotional materials with Jane and her...
It's notorious.
Cleavage.
It's
But that's 7 o'clock. I guess that's pretty much it locally. We're going to talk about the classic series at the Tivoli this week. Nobody died except the director, Radley Metzger, who had a big cult following. He was really more of a pornographer.
Yeah, softball mostly.
But I don't really consider pornography to be cinema, personally. But Radley Metzger sure did. He tried to make these art sex films, and most of his films did have hardcore footage in them, but they were also, not as much as most. So they were able to actually remove the hardcore footage and release R-rated versions of his movies. Licorice Quartet, opening of Misty Beethoven, Score, which is a really good one with Lynn Lowry, who's a cult actress. He tried his hand at mainstream with The Cat and the Canary in 1977 with Carol Lindley, then went back to his adult movies. But a huge cult following Radley Metzger had. He was a guest at conventions and things like that, and was apparently an intelligent guy and really tried to add art to pornography, and was probably the most successful at attempting to do that.
In this country,
Yeah. So, R.I.P. to that guy. All right, moving on. Now we're going to talk about the Classics on the Loop series at the Tivoli, which debuts this Wednesday. They did a Classics on the Loop series last fall, and it was like epics. Every movie was 3.5 hours long. Dr. Zhivago and Lawrence of Arabia and...
Gone with the Wind
and Ten Commandments. And they did them on the big screen, which you got to be glad that they chose their 320-seat big screen to show these epics. And they're doing it again. But this spring, the theme is more crime and noir.
Yeah, lots of noir.
Lots Great of noir, classes. Yeah. And it starts this Friday. I mean, it's Wednesday, rather. It's 7 o'clock, and the admission is $7 for all of these films. Every Wednesday for the next 8 weeks, you can go see a classic. I was going to say black and white, but actually the last two are in color. Crime film, Maltese Falcon this Wednesday.
Oh, yes.
You guys up for it?
Oh, I'm definitely going to be there. One of my favorites.
Yeah, but they just show that at...
doesn't matter.
Fathom
events and at the High Point
the
on
chance
a Saturday morning.
I miss both those, but the chance to see it on a big screen, that's always a
Wednesday,
treat.
That's this Wednesday, April 5th.
So many good films in this series. If you like noir, Double Indemnity.
Oh, yeah, Double Indemnity, which they just showed
at Webster. I was going to say, is Maltese Falcon pretty much the grandfather of noir?
It is considered to be one of the first film noirs.
Even though that story had been filmed before
a couple
of times. But the 41 version is the one that really kicked things
it's
off.
It's the style, the atmosphere, John Huston's technique, and Humphrey Bogart, of course. But there's so many other good ones in here. Double Indemnity.
Yeah, that's the 12th.
Sunset Boulevard, The Third Man.
Dark Passage, I've never
seen. Touch of Evil.
Yeah, Delmar.
In fact, Renee said that was her favorite of the Bogie and Bacall collaboration.
And that's not actually film noir, so it doesn't fit in, but it's the same.
Well, I think it's more crime. It's crime and noir. That's why.
Yeah, it has elements, certainly. Yeah. And the whole POV thing for about the first hour or so of the film.
Yeah, it has a lot of the style.
That's which April 19th.
Robert Montgomery used for Lady in the Lake. Was that the movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what was the Hardcore Henry?
Right.
Not to forget Hardcore Henry.
But Double Indemnity is a classic. We saw that a couple of years ago at Webster, and there were actually a lot of people in the audience had never seen it before, and I was thinking, boy, are you lucky.
Yeah, you're in for a treat.
Yeah, that is a treat. That's the great, Billy Wilder's in this festival twice. Yeah. He's there with that and with the great Sunset Boulevard.
On the April 26th for Sunset Boulevard.
And another one of my favorites, Third Man, and then there's Touch of Evil, and when we get into the little more current ones, Chinatown
74. That was one of the clips they showed at our trivia night over the weekend.
It was. Had Jack Nicholson, the big bandage on his face. But that's a terrific
one. That's May 17th, Chinatown. May 10th is Touch of Evil. May 3rd is The Third Man. Oh, how appropriate. The Third Man on the 3rd. And they're going to cap it off with Blood Simple on May 24th.
Yeah.
Which I saw at the Varsity, which was right down the street from the Tivoli when it was new.
Yeah.
Actually, I went, this is a funny story. I went to the Varsity and they were showing The Last Dragon, Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon. And all these people showed up to see The Last Dragon. The crowd was full of, people who would enjoy The Last Dragon. Well, actually, they were showing a sneak of Blood Simple. Everybody started complaining and yelling because they weren't showing The Last Dragon. They were showing Blood Simple. But finally, they settled down and watched Blood Simple. And by the end of Blood Simple, they were all screaming.
Screaming with joy?
Screaming with fear.
That is a pretty creepy film.
Yeah,
that's
it's
for
intense.
Sure.
All right, so by all means, go and support this film series. If they get big crowds, they'll do it again maybe in the fall.
Maybe
they'll do a Charles Bronson festival.
I was going to say, Sunset Boulevard has a nice cameo by Buster Keaton in it.
Yes, it does. Yeah, kind of playing cards.
That's right. That's probably part of the icons. What did they say? It wasn't William Holden calls them a living wax museum or something.
Yes, right. Yeah. No, it was perfect casting.
Definitely.
All right. Well, I think that's about it. We can wrap this show up here. Put it in the can. Next week we'll be back and we can review Going in Style. What else can we review next week?
Well, sees Gifted, I guess we can review.
Yeah,
it.
I'm going to see Gifted.
I'm going to see.
Oh, you're seeing Gifted.
I'm going to see that next Monday. So, I'm going to hold off and see it at a better venue.
Right, that's going to open another week.
Well, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about because we always do. But for now, we're going to have to sign off. I'm Tom Stockman,
Jim Batts,
Kate Marquis.
Be sure to listen again next week.
Kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock. Black leather, smash, smash, smash. Black leather, crash, crash, crash. Black leather, kill, kill, kill. I got that feeling, black leather rock.
Forward into battle, there, chaps. Crash, crash. Black leather, smash, smash, smash. You happy in your work, Johnny?